So what do you do to disconnect from tech? What techniques do you have for getting your children away from the screens? And why is this important? I'm Lee Rayburn in for Larry Mueller today, and you're listening to The Larry Mueller Show. Our next guest is Melissa Westendorf. She's a clinical and forensic psychologist, an author, and co-founder of the Technology Wellness Center based in Wisconsin. Her latest book, Digital Distressed, Growing Up Online. And if you have questions about our addictions to the screens, our culture that seems increasingly online, and what you can do to keep kids, to give them an alternative to going to their phones or screens, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or send us an email to talk@wpr.org. And Melissa, welcome to the Larry Mueller Show.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'm pretty sure most of us have joked about it in the past that we can't stop our doom scrolling or our binge watching, but even in those words are our concerns, the doom and the binge and things that do not have any sort of positive connotations. But can we really be addicted to something like technology, Melissa?
Well, you know, it's not the actual device, right? It's just, how does it affect us? What does it do to our productivity? What does it do to our emotions and how we feel? And so that's the, quote, addicted part of it, is how much we're using it, and really, how much does it interfere with our life?
So how would this compare to other issues of abuse or addiction, like substances, alcohol, or drugs?
Yeah, well, it's going to be similar in that the dopamine hit. Like, we've all heard about the dopamine hit, and the phone does just that as well, because we are inundated with notifications and all these apps. Everything on our phone is so just wants us to look at it, and it's so attractive to us. And while the computer may have apps and exciting things and the doom scrolling we talk about, the phone goes with us everywhere, which is what makes it so much more difficult. We can take it anywhere that we go.
And I was thinking about this yesterday as we were during the Super Bowl, as the ads were telling us to go online and gamble, that how similar a casino floor can be to the cell phone in our pockets, the compulsion and the things that they will do to try to get your attention to draw you in.
Right. It's the same premise, right? Casinos have a very difficult way to get out of them, right? It's not a straight line. And our phones are with us all the time. I mean, it's the same concept, right? We're just having the phone on your desk is distracting, whether it's turned upside down or you're looking at it's distracting. And research has shown that if the phone is on your desk, it is distracting to you, and you'll be slower in doing different tasks. So it's just, it's with us, it's everywhere. And so we just need to find ways to cut it back in any way we can.
But I think of addiction as both physical addiction and mental addiction. And I can understand the argument that our technology might have a mental addiction component to it, an emotional addiction component to it. But as you talk about the dopamine hit, there also could be a physical addiction to that, right?
Yeah, it's exactly. It's every... What we have found in research, people will check their phones up to 12 times an hour.
Only 12?
Or 80 times a day. Yeah, I know. I thought it was a little low. Other research says we look at it, you know, well over 200, 300, 400 times a day. We'll check it. But, you know, so it's just that little hit that makes us feel better. And it's replaced the things that maybe we used to get that little hit from. We have to recognize all those companies that are making all these things that can be useful. They're targeted to us to be really, really attractive. And so it does take a really conscious effort to make those changes.
So the on the other side of my phone or the other side of my screen is the insistence that they're going to get your attention. And then once they get your attention, their actions are all about keeping your attention. And as they get your attention and keep your attention, it makes you begin to wonder what other things you may be missing while you're paying attention to these screens. That makes a lot of sense to me.
Absolutely. 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 It's, you know, maybe it's not a problem to look at it, but if you're online talking to people, you're not talking to people in real life. I just read this little study where they had two groups. One had a phone to find a building. The other group did not have a phone to find the building. And while the one group found it faster, the one with the phone, right, the other group had to talk to people. So they had more social interactions, right? So when you don't have your phone, you have the social interactions. But when you're using the phone, you don't need them. And so it's all these things we give up. We give up our activities. We give up seeing our family or reading a book or whatever our hobbies used to be.
The dopamine hit of actual human interaction has been replaced by the dopamine hit of a brick that has some shiny lights in it. But does that make one dopamine hit any lesser than the other?
No, it's all the same, right? I mean, the brain functions with the dopamine hit. And so it will trigger parts of the brain just like drugs do, just like gambling does. And so it's working off the same process. The brain is the brain, right? And it works off the same process, unfortunately.
Melissa Westendorf, our guest, clinical and forensic psychologist, co-founder of the Technology Wellness Center in Wisconsin. And we invite you to the conversation at 1-800-642-1234. What do you disconnect from your screens? How do you figure out strategies to putting down the phone? How do you walk away from binge watching? 1-800-642-1234 or email talk@wpr.org. We'll go to Michael and Madison first. Michael, good afternoon.
Hi. Just a couple things. I want to thank you for having your guest and addressing the subject. I personally don't have a smartphone. I kind of am lucky that I recognize that it's being potentially toxic to myself, my mental health, even though I'm an older retired fellow. I've never had a smartphone. In fact, I'm talking to folks on a flip phone, and when people see that, some of them, you know, call me a Luddite, which may have to be defined for some of the listeners, but others say that they wish they could have that, have a flip phone, including my 26-year-old son, who basically needs it to stay connected to his work and his friends and what he, you know, everything else he does with his social life. But he's like, Dad, I really wish I could have a flip phone. And I'm like, well, that's your choice, whatever you want to do. But I feel very blessed that I was able to nip this whole thing in the bud for myself. And I want to encourage Melissa, and I'm sure she will, to address this issue with parents, because I think the technology has tremendous potential to be upsetting to the development of the adolescent brain and to take away from other activities, including academical activities. And socializing on a screen it does not replace at all the socialization that you can do in person. You know, facial recognition, recognizing emotions, all that other good stuff that we used to do before this technology exists. Now, I will say there are definitely some good aspects to it for some people, but it has to be very well regulated.
Well, Michael, I am very much in the same boat as your son, as I, work revolves around screens these days, that it all comes through the screens. And when I started in radio, I remember it was newspapers and magazines, and now it is all subscription services and websites. But Michael's question about adolescents and kids are perfect for you, Melissa, because your latest book is Digital Distress, Growing Up Online. It focuses on Gen Z and what our technology is doing to them. And what can you say about what you have found?
All the things that the caller mentioned, it does affect. We have found just through our work with kids that it can affect four different areas, physical, behavioral, interpersonal, and emotional areas. And so in the book, we address it a lot, like specific strategies you can use. You know, a strong one is waiting until a child is in eighth grade to give them a smartphone. And I know that is, believe me, my children were not happy with that.
The amount of peer pressure there is almost like the kind of peer pressure we were taught as kids when it came to drugs and alcohol.
Yeah, it is. I would agree. And I know it's exceptionally difficult. And, you know, they are integrated online so much. I mean, there's apps that the kids have for school or tracking or So it's really, really difficult. And so having all the open discussions with your kids about, you know, what phones are doing, and they get a lot of that. I mean, it's in the media. Mm-hmm. So you really have to, this is probably one of the tougher parenting decisions that people have had to make, right? Because it is so prolific. But you certainly can see in those four different areas that I mentioned how it impacts kids. And in my other life, so to speak, I'm a forensic psychologist. So I see it after there have been some legal issues that have become involved. And it's terrifying to me, actually, what can happen with kids when they get addicted or overusing their phone. So you start small, right? You start with, if they are already have their phones, then you come up with strategies that can move the needle forward for more real person time, so to speak, what they call that. And so that can be anywhere from, you know, no phones in the dining room, or only phone use in the living room, you know, when people are present, no phones in the bedrooms. I have advocated for a very, very long time, no telephones in the, I'm sorry, not telephones, televisions in the bedroom, right, for kids, right? Because research has shown they sleep less when that happens. Well, now we're with phones, if you permit them to go into the bedroom, you're taking not only the television, but all the other stuff. And so, you know, that's got to be a hard line, that no phone can be in the bedroom. Because it will interfere with sleep. And one of the worst things we can do is keep attacking our sleep.
You make me think of back when I was a kid, Melissa, there were no cell phones. There was only the phone that was hung up on the wall. And the going through adolescence, you try to figure out a way to get a phone in your room so you could have some privacy when you talked. And I couldn't get a phone in my room, so I went to Radio Shack and bought a 60-foot extension cord so I could carry the phone mouthpiece into my room while it was still mounted on the wall in the living
yep.
room. So I can understand the pull and the desire to, you know, have that capability of building my own private life that's, you know, albeit virtual, but still is a way to connect with the world from the friendly confines of my own bedroom.
I get it. I mean, it's not easy. I mean, I've been talking to families and schools and social workers and all sorts of people for over a decade about this stuff. It's not gotten any easier, but keeping it out of the bedroom is probably one of the best things that parents can do for kids who already have their phones.
Okay.
Again, waiting until they're a little older is, you know, the first strategy if you can. Not for parents with real young children, not handing them a phone to entertain them. And believe me, I get the pull if a kid is yelling or, you know, mm-hmm. having a conniption fit, so to speak. You want to give the phone, but if you can prevent from doing that, that is the best thing as well.
But so the arguments when we were kids were, you know, you're going to get lung cancer in your smoke if you smoke, and you're going to die. So you do not want to smoke. You want to stay away from drugs. You'll become addicted and you're going to die. But how do you make those cases of health, fitness, and longevity when we're talking about something like cell phones?
Well, I talked a lot in my own home about sleep, the importance of sleep,
okay.
and the effect that the phones have with their blue light and how it keeps you from sleeping. I developed dizziness because I have to admit there was a time in my life when I played a little too much Candy Crush at night when I couldn't find a book to read.
Oh, that casino.
That's right. And so, you know, through my doctor, we figured it out. I was excessively fatigued because I wasn't getting good sleep. And so I know it was unbelievable to me. So we talk a lot about sleep. So what does that mean? It means I don't look at my phone at least 2 hours. We used to say that it was 1 hour, no screen time, right? Because of the melatonin. Now it's at least 2 to 4 hours, which is what I figured out based on my own experience.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you approach it from that way, that backs up the phone use, you know, when's their bedtime, you back up the phone use. When they get good sleep, right, then they're learning more, they're retaining more information, they feel more energetic, And then you can talk about how that affects their athletic endeavors or their theater endeavors, you know, being able to stay awake and be able to process. I tended to send links through our family group chat about some of the effects, right? Just keeping it as part of the conversation. And then having really strict rules about not at the dinner table. And if we're having a conversation, you have to put your phone away. If we're traveling somewhere, vacationing somewhere, you can't have your phone out. So just having some rules in place like that can at least encourage children to, you know, do what's best for them. But sometimes it just takes some experience as well, because in the end, this is entertainment, right? The phone is entertainment for us.
What about systemic solutions? And I'm thinking of a story from just last week from WPR News' Sarah Lear about state lawmakers in Wisconsin looking to advance bills that would add age-related restrictions and protections for digital apps and social media platforms, saying that because they are designed to be addictive, additional safeguards are needed to shield kids. Is this something that you see could be effective on a larger scale, Melissa?
Certainly, you know, companies admitting to how the apps are developed to have that, they're not going to say addictive quality, but that they're targeting short attention spans, right? Mm. And so having that being acknowledged, and then, right, like the age restrictions are great, but, you know, kids get around all that, yeah. Right? So it really has to take some work. We have to get cooperation between the corporations and legislators. You know, the people who make these devices, they know them the best, right? They know the apps the best. And what could they implement to help with kids and adolescents so that they don't develop these difficulties that continue on later in life? But believe me, I've seen lots of adults with these same issues.
The feeling for me, and I would think this would apply not just to kids, but also to adults, is this fear of missing out, or FOMO, that if I put the phone away, I don't know what I'm missing in this entire connected world that is all coming through just this one little black box. How do we push back against that FOMO that can compel us sometimes to draw us into the screen?
That's a good question, because it is so powerful. Yeah. I think we all have to admit that we experience it, right? It way back in the day with magazines, right? It wasn't a fear of missing out, but it was, you know, the level of attractiveness or what other people have, right? What the neighbor next door has, what, you know, that's always been there. And, you know, now, of course, with the phones, like, we just bring it right into our house. And so we being able to catch it ourselves when we experience it and talking about it could be helpful for kids, because they may not recognize it. They just see it as like, oh, that looks really fun. I really want to do it. Yeah. When it's being driven by, my life is so boring because I'm not doing these things. You know, helping to get them to understand that. Again, it's all really very, it's difficult.
It's so psychological. It's so inside our heads. Like, they know what we're thinking. They know what we want. And they're going to feed it to us through these little screens. And then we get the dopamine hit, and it somehow makes it feel okay. And this, to me, sounds like addiction. It sounds like we're describing addiction.
Absolutely. I mean, I would agree with that. Now, there's a lot of negative connotations with the word addiction. And so I struggle a little bit, and I like to use the word overuse.
Okay.
But it is, I mean, it's an easier word to use, you know? The thing is it's a process addiction, right? Much like gambling, it's a process addiction. And so, while we still need to use the cell phone, there are things that we can do to help change that process. There's lots of good suggestions that are out there. I know some people, and I have to admit, I've had this myself, like sometimes I get a phantom vibration on my smartwatch,
yes.
Right? It really didn't vibrate, but I swear it did. So simply taking off your smartwatch from time to time, like there's just little things so that you don't get notified of something that you potentially are missing out on, right?
When I have some sore muscles, I can take some ibuprofen. If I have taken too much screen time at one time, is there any remedy for that? Is there something something else we can do other than putting down the phone?
Well, so one of the things I suggest is you can turn your smartphone into the grayscale. And I don't know if people have heard about that, but you know, if you go into your accessibility feature, and then this is for the iPhone. I don't know how it is on other phones, but you can go to your display text and size. They have color filters. And if you click on grayscale, that takes the color away. And then maybe, you know, when you take that color away, things become less attractive. And I've done that actually periodically myself, and it seems to help. Just the phone is not quite as interesting.
Yeah, what does Candy Crush look like in grayscale? Probably not nearly as fun.
No, it's not nearly as much fun. So, you know, that's one thing that you can do. The other thing is I tell people or counsel people to not bring their phone into the bedroom, no matter what. Don't bring your phone into the bedroom. So if that means maybe you have a smartwatch that is your alarm clock, or you buy an alarm clock, but don't bring it into the bedroom, because, you know, if you do, it's just way too tempting. There's all sorts of really nice do not disturb features on our phones now, or focus features. Mm-hmm. Get all those up and running to help dissuade you from, you know, checking your phone constantly. Taking the notifications off the front of the screen can be helpful. Turning off all those sounds. Those are some of the things that can be helpful, I think, and what some of the people I've worked with have thought that they, you know, any little bit helps, right? You know, back in 2022, the data was showing we're on our phones at least up to 3 hours a day, which seems kind of small, but 3 hours a day. And now it's up to 4.5 hours.
Yeah.
And there's not that much time that has passed. So this is going to increasingly tick up. And so anytime you can knock that number down just a little bit, right? Maybe you'll if you don't bring your phone into the bedroom, you start to read a book, you remember your love for reading, and then you start doing it during the day instead of, you know, scrolling through your phone.
Part of this is that, you know, for many folks, they will spend 8 hours a day in front of one screen. Actually, I've got two in front of me now, and will have two in front of me for the rest of my workday. So what can I do after a long day of having to work in front of screens to unwind, Melissa?
Well, I encourage you to, one, exercise. Exercise has been shown to help diminish the use of the phone. Now, this is, of course, self-report, but because you're getting your dopamine hit in another way, right?
Sure.
Exercise, the endorphins, all exercise is very rewarding. And so exercise is a good option. When I'm working throughout the day, you can take those little breaks. It's easy, really easy to sit down in front of that computer all day long and not even think about it. There's a time when I had a little sticky note that said blink, because we blink less often when we are looking at the computer. I kid you not.
No, I felt that eye burn that, you know,
yes,
my eyes are dried out and cracking because I have not blinked in a while. I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. So that's the 20-20-20 rule, right? Every 20 minutes, you look away from your computer for 20 seconds at least 20 feet away. But getting outdoors is really refreshing for our whole body, our brain. And so that's one way to decompress from everything that we've been doing during the day on the computer. But I'd still say during the day, you need to take those active breaks. Get up once an hour and give your eyes that break.
Melissa, I feel like we've just scratched the surface here, so let's do this again. I thank you so much for your information today. Melissa Westendorf is a clinical and forensic psychologist, the co-founder of the Technology Wellness Center based in Wisconsin, and the author of the latest book, Digital Distress, Growing Up Online, looking specifically at our Gen Z kids and how they are adapting to our technology. When we continue, how are the Olympics adapting to our technology, specifically the technology that has become wearable science? You may not see it, but it is there, and we will talk about it next when we continue. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Larry Mueller today, and you are listening to The Larry Mueller Show.